Okay. It's the scant last few peeps. The dedicated and some new. It's always fun to have new people at the end. I do it again. I do it again. I do too. This has been great. Hey, you guys are coming in for the last one too? Cool. Hey, Cayman. Good, good. I think it'd be fun to have different, there'll be two different teachers. Probably Lamala will be next, the nun. And hey, Cayman, would you do me a favor and close the door? Thank you. I forgot to do that. Thanks. And then Dave Mackles will teach again. That's, oh, I'm guessing that might be the format. But in between each one, there'll be Buddhism in a nutshell. 5 weeks of that. And then just goes and goes. And different teachers. Scott Miller and who else teaches that? Donna and Barb. Are those? Do you teach that? Okay. I think it's Scott and Donna and Barb so far. I don't know if Lamala teaches that or not. Alrighty. Welcome to number 5. We should have cake and ice cream or something to celebrate. We'll just have to do visualization meditation on that. So let's make sure we have our cell phones off. I'm going to do the same. Put them on meditate. So we're tonight, since we've done this quite often, we're going to quickly go through these 7 and just kind of glance over the body and make sure that we're sitting nice and straight. Tonight I want to make sure that anything that you've had a question about gets answered, so that anything that's come up for these last classes, if there's any residual stuff, that we make sure that that's all nice and clear. Since look, you're getting brave tonight. Yeah, you can move back and forth. That's cool. So we're starting with, I'm just going to do, you can look at this list. I'm going to start with, I think it starts at the bottom. I always have to ask you, legs, each time I get a volunteer. So you want to make sure the legs are nice and firm on the ground. We've said several times it's important to have your hips higher than your knees. And so I've told several of you that I didn't do that, because even if you're quite comfortable, like I'm comfortable right now, nothing hurts, but my hips aren't really that high. So if you're going to do this for a long time, it's good to start something and do it correctly so that you can last, because you never know how long you're going to do something. So I noticed my knees started hurting after a while, and I think it's probably because I was sitting too low. I was sitting on one of those little square ones. So just because you're comfortable doesn't mean it's actually correct. And I thought, you know, I need to pay attention to what the people are saying who've done this for 45 years. And so I noticed that Geshe-la always talks about having the hips higher, and I thought I should do that. Should listen to him. And I think it's made my knees feel better. So I want to make sure that you guys have some good tools for yourself as you proceed. So the legs are a nice balance posture. And then hands. So the hands can be in any situation, and they could be on the knees or like this. But here we do right on top of the left, wisdom and compassion. And the thumbs lightly touching below the belly.
So this is the stereotypical.
Yeah. Pictures. And I did this for 20 years, 15 years. Mm-hmm. I tell people, if you have a tendency to have your shoulders roll forward, if you're one of those people who has sort of a extended back muscles and tight chest muscles, then if you do this, you kind of give yourself a natural, you know, natural roll. But this, it does, actually, now that I'm so used to this position, I'm quite comfortable like this. So this, you know, I used to do middle finger together, but I don't know that there's a right or wrong. They say that's for closing the energy circuit, but we don't teach that here, so it's whatever makes you comfortable. You can have your hands open. You could even feel like you're receiving something, you know, putting yourself in a state of reception. So that's that, arms. And then if they're like this, then they're nice and open so that you don't sweat too much. You don't want them like that. So we're imagining that all these things are for people who really do a long meditation, have a deep practice. And so in that way, if you were nice and tight like this, you might get too hot. So it's really just for air. It's fine. So we talk about sometimes if we just have a relationship of straighten the back, and you hear people always say sit up straight. If you change the way you think about something, sometimes it can help you be clear about it. So if you think about lifting up the front of your vertebrae, it adds a little difference, like, oh, I'm going to lift up this way. And in that way, I think you can sit straight, or you roll your pelvis forward, and then you think of stacking your spine like coins. So, of course, you wouldn't want to be crimped. It's kind of logical, because you would cut off the energy flow and the breath. So even if you weren't too hippy-dippy and didn't want to talk about energy, you still have to breathe. So if you breathe from here up, it can actually lead to a slight depression. It can lead to lack of oxygen. It could just be uncomfortable, and you won't really know anything's happening. But if you can change that breath and get it nice and low with the spine being straight, you'll feel a lot better, and the head. So you can even imagine, sometimes in yoga we talk about being that little puppy dog in the... So you wouldn't really want to do that. But imagine you can start off with it feeling nice and loose. And the one way to feel that is if there was a bubble of air on the top cervical vertebrae that was right in between your skull. And if your skull is like jammed on there, like mine usually feels kind of stuck. But if you think of it sitting on this bubble of air, it even visually or mentally kind of creates some ease. And your shoulders dropping down so the head is lifted up. And it's not lifted up through the front, it's lifted up through the back. So if you imagine you're being pulled by a marionette string, so even like you can tilt your head back just a touch and lift up through the back of the top, which will lower your chin, but it's kind of different than just lowering your chin. Does everybody feel good about that? This is your last time to go over it. So the tongue is placed on the roof of the mouth very lightly behind the front row of teeth.
Mm-hmm. You're like, well, I don't know, I've not meditated long.
Yeah, for days.
I was actually running the other day. I realized that if you do that, you actually can't, you have to breathe through your nose. You can't breathe through your mouth.
And your
nose. Like, oh. So I think it keeps you from breathing through your mouth.
Mouth breathing. That's a good way to think about it. In yoga, we do talk about breathing through the nose, in and out, through all the positions, because even when you're doing something really difficult, like Deanne might do in my class or something. If one was to breathe through the mouth, it creates more heat and it creates more dry mouth. So that's pretty simple, just functional stuff. Eyes. So eyes are nice and soft and open or closed. But it's nice the way they say gently open or gently closed. So I think that word adds a little bit to it. And letting the light come in if you get sleepy or if you want to practice like that all the time, it's probably preferred. I tend to close. I'm used to it, but I do get sleepy. So the open eye would be gaze about like at this angle, and then you can imagine that light is going to help that meditation. And if you get too distracted, if you get too, if you're just too excited, even anger, anything kind of comes up and it's too much. If you close your eyes, obviously it'll help you go in a little bit. Good. That wasn't as quick as I intended, but hopefully it was helpful. So anything about posture? Anything at all? Getting easier? Good. Get a good pillow, yeah. It is, you do have to find the one that suits you. You'll find these are buckwheat and those are cotton batting. I think that's the word for that. So it has a different feel to it. You can try those different things out. Yeah, buckwheat can get a little hard. But it is like, it does change. So if you meditated for 10 minutes, it's completely different than an hour. Everything starts to get a little cranky maybe. So we'll just set our positive motivation. I'll start and then I'll leave you a little space and then we'll just do a body of light meditation to set a pace for tonight. We did that last week. So usually we start off a motivation by thinking that you hope that this is going to be beneficial to yourself and your mind. And in that way, it can be beneficial to so many beings for their future enlightenment, because we are working on ourselves and we hope that in some small way our own mind being calm and relaxed, not jumping to conclusions, doing all those things can be less agitated and therefore more helpful. So find your intention for why you came here tonight. And then open the field up, let it be nice and big, and include as many beings as you can. Okay, we'll begin by just sitting comfortably with your back straight, breathing nice and natural, focusing your attention on your breath. And you've been led through many various breathing meditations. So If you haven't come before, you can simply count your breaths by counting the inhalations, either counting to 10 and starting over, counting to 21, using 9 round breathing. And remembering that if your mind becomes distracted and you catch it, keep on counting. If your mind becomes distracted and you're lost in a story, then just simply start over with no judgments, no worries at all. Allow this mindfulness of paying attention to the breath to settle your mind right into the moment, each and every moment, and lead you into a more concentrated state. And now visualize in the space above your head a sphere of white light, pure, transparent, formless, and somewhat smaller than the size of your head. Spend several minutes concentrating on the presence of the light. And don't worry if it does not appear sharply, it is enough just to feel it is there. Contemplate that the sphere of light represents all universal goodness, love, and wisdom, the fulfillment of your own highest potential. And then visualize that it decreases in size until it is the size of a small bright sphere about 1 inch in diameter. This small ball of pure white light descends through the top of your head to your heart center. And from there it begins to expand once more, slowly spreading to fill your entire body. As it does, all the solid parts of your body dissolve and become light. Your organs, bones, blood vessels, tissue, and skin all become pure, formless, white light. concentrate on the experience of your body as a body of light. And think that all the problems, negativities, and hindrances have completely vanished, and that you have reached a state of wholeness and perfection, feeling serene and joyful. And if any thought or distracting object should appear in your mind, let it also dissolve into the white light. Maintain the focus of serenity and joy. And we dedicate the positive energy and insights of this meditation to the well-being and happiness of all beings. That looks good. I love everybody's face. Okay, so it's our traditional check-in. How did last week go? Roger, what's the report? Last week. Your meditations.
The ones we did here? Or?
No, your own personal.
It's going to take a lot of practice.
Oh, he's giving you a microphone.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of practice. And the books I've read, they say you have to be patient, you know. So practice and patience. And
he's my plug.
So that's what I'm doing. But I am meditating every day.
Good.
Today I meditated for a half hour when I woke up. And then before coming here, I meditated for a half hour. And tonight I'm going to meditate from 10. I start at 10. I'm trying to do it for an hour, but usually about 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But when I first started, it was like 15 minutes. Now it's about 25 to 30, so hopefully it'll keep going up.
Good.
Yeah.
They say it is actually better to start a little slower, so then you can maintain a little longer.
Yeah.
So and I'm not going to tell you not to by any means. I'm not going to get involved in that, but it just you want to always create a sense that you want to come back to that cushion, and when you look at it, you're happy to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't want to go, I don't want to sit down, I'm scared.
Yeah.
I didn't like it, or I get tired.
Yeah.
So make sure it's a really good positive. It sounds like it's going great for you.
Yeah, yeah.
We've talked about his fortunate rebirth to have the time to meditate. So and so what we're all going to do is rejoice in Roger's effort. Yeah, we get lots of karma for that by rejoicing. So if you didn't know that yet, you wait for the karma DB. You'll be happy that you did it now. So.
Okay. Anybody else? Or?
Karen? Anybody?
Nobody?
Yeah, she's. Get to end with a microphone on last night?
So I've made more time, and I've started doing it in the mornings, even though it might only be 5 minutes, but
good.
It's better than nothing, so I'm doing it more often. And the last probably week or and a half has been particularly stressful, and I probably would have broken down by now.
look at her big smile.
But it's gotten much – but I do find that the more stressed I am, the more difficult it is to do, but the more I need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made a habit of it. But I haven't yelled at my kids in like a month. So
score.
That's a definite plug right there. My son was like, you haven't yelled at me in like for a month. What's going on? Yeah, you
Yay.
Go to your class.
Go to your class, Mom. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's
so,
great. That's really great to hear.
It's been a little harder to stay focused lately, but I don't let that discourage me.
It's going to be different every day.
All my coworkers, because they're all stressed. So we're undergoing a difficult time right now at work, and they're
good.
All stressed. I was like, you need to meditate. So.
Good. Anybody else? Karen, do you have anything you want to say? No? Okay. Let me take it away. So I think that brings up a good point to sometimes we tend to want something to be a success, like we want it to say it went well and that, oh, this was a good one and this was a bad one. We're so judgmental, the queens we, not I. And so it's really helpful if you just say, that was a meditation. I just meditated. And just not have any worries if it went, you know, it doesn't have to go one way or the other. It's just a long journey. We got a lot of time. So it's really nice that you, even if you just sit down and say, I'm just going to give it a few. I've told you last week that sometimes those are the richest meditations I've had where just like, whoa, something really unique. Nothing fabulous. Just like I really did actually get quite calm within just a few minutes because you create the practice and the comfort of doing that. And it's like a trusted friend you can go to. Like, I'm just going to sit here for a minute with you and then I know I'll feel better. And so good for that. Good for the small sessions. Success obstacles. We did that. We've left the floor open for any questions, so please jump in if you have any. I thought I'd read a little story to you tonight. Just some things about oh no, I want to read this one. Someone was telling me about, there it is. It prints really tiny. Cortisol. So anybody, yeah. So I mean, it's like I've heard of it, and I could probably tell you what it does, but definitively I couldn't say that I really knew exactly, and my friend's a meditator in a different tradition, and so she just went, yeah, your cortisol rises, and the insulin does this, and it does this, and it affects your health, and do you want to gain weight? No. Then quit getting stressed. She was telling someone else, and I thought, wow, I really need to have that little blurb down. This is what I do, too. So I printed something out until I memorize it. And I thought I would just read it to you because I think this is exactly what we need to hear on why we need to meditate and what are the benefits. Cortisol and stress, how to stay healthy. It's an important hormone in the body secreted by the adrenal glands and involved in the following functions. Proper glucose metabolism, yeah. You know, when you read it, you go metabolism. That's not right. Regulation of blood pressure, insulin release for blood sugar maintenance, immune function, and inflammatory response. Normally, it's present in the body at higher levels in the morning and at its lowest at night. Although stress isn't the only reason that cortisol is secreted into the bloodstream, and we were talking about the blood being changed with meditation, it has been termed the stress hormone because it is also secreted in higher levels during the body's fight-or-flight response to stress and is responsible for several stress-related changes in the body. So some of these changes are okay, but, you know, you can see in the long-term effect, a quick burst of energy for survival reasons, heightened memory functions, a burst of increased immunity, lower sensitivity to pain, and helps maintain homeostasis in the body. So at first you're like, oh, what was she talking about? You know, sounds good. She's having a good time over here. She must be meditating. Are you meditating, honey? No. Are you YouTubing? No. While cortisol is an important and helpful part of the body's response to stress, it is important that the body's relaxation response to be activated. So following that, if it's been secreted, so the body's function can return to normal following a stressful event. Unfortunately, in our current high-stress culture, the body's stress response is activated so often that the body doesn't always have a chance to return to normal, resulting in a state of chronic stress. Anybody understand that? Higher and more prolonged levels of cortisol in the bloodstream, like those associated with chronic stress, have been shown to show, here we go, negative side effects. Impaired cognitive performance, that's also menopause, okay, put that in there. or pregnancy, one of the other. Suppressed thyroid function, blood sugar imbalances such as hypoglycemia, decreased bone density, that was a little shocking, decrease in muscle tissue, higher blood pressure, lowered immunity and inflammatory responses in the body, slowed wound healing and other health consequences, increased abdominal fat. There we go. That's what she was talking about with her sister, which is associated with a greater amount of health problems than fat deposited in other areas of the body. Some of the health problems associated with that are stomach fat are heart attacks, strokes, the development of metabolic syndrome. I don't know what that is. I can't regulate, okay. Higher levels of bad cholesterol and lower levels of good cholesterol. So, that's not so great. sounds like I'm doing a commercial for them. Sign up now. To keep cortisol levels healthy and under control, the body's relaxation response should be activated after the fight or flight response occurs. You can learn to relax your body with various stress management techniques. So, I thought that was great. Guided imagery, journaling, self-hypnosis. That's kind of it. Is anybody shocked by that too? A little bit, or is it something everybody knew?
I knew about I just didn't know much about the positive effects of meditation on a lot of those things.
Yeah.
And actually, so since I started this class, I've become completely fascinated with the science behind meditation and how it helps you not just mentally but physically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've read another quote this week. It was that happiness is to be practiced like a violin.
Oh, that's nice.
They say basically, there's a neuroscientist. I downloaded some.
Yeah.
A neuroscientist, and he studied all these long-term, really devoted meditators. Basically, they've gone to 3-year retreats to every day. They had 40,000 hours of meditation in their life. And he was just studying their brains.
Mm-hmm.
He said that what you could see, the science behind it, it's just amazing.
It's real.
It was real. It's not just a spiritual thing. It's
right.
Really neurological.
And I think your whole face looks softer this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would have broken down by now.
Yeah, I can usually kind of see it. And your face looks lighter, happier. I mean, not just happier, the actual structure of the face. It changes. Okay. So tonight we're just going to talk more about analytical meditation, and Roger had some questions about that. One word that came up was that I was reminded of in explaining something to him in the beginning was the glance meditation, and I don't think we've mentioned that before. We've talked about it, but we probably didn't label it glance meditation. So he was asking me just about my own practice, but something you can do when you would begin by breathing, which we've always talked about in every meditation, and or doing some kind of 9-round breathing or counting the breaths, but something to, as Venerable Renee says, to bring the mind home to start off. And then if you have your own topics you're working on, if you're doing something that is topic-oriented, you would go through that. But it's also helpful, but even if you are doing that, to read some kind of, if you're practicing in this tradition, you can do some kind of overall topic. So we call it the Lam Rim, and we would read this maybe 10 paragraphs, small paragraphs that encompass the whole thing, like a little slice, a picture of the whole thing. Or if you weren't practicing this tradition, you could do something that was like thinking of what the whole message of the Bible was or something like that, where you think of the whole thing at a shot, and then you kind of put that whole picture in your mind of the idea of it. And that's like a glance at all of it. And then you can hone in on something. Or if you were reading something out of a book, you can read it, and then you'd want to kind of get an idea, like what we've done before in here is, this isn't the book to do it with, but if there was one that said, I would read the headlines and then summarize them very briefly. The benefits of that, the benefits of that, the detriments to this, that kind of thing. And then you begin your meditation and you yourself go through those things and go, okay, what are the benefits? And then you're in the review portion. So glancing is a look at the whole thing and then reviewing. And then, and this whole thing is an analytical meditation. And then when you find something that, if it moves your heart, if you get to a place where you just, or you could call it different things. So if anybody has another word there to throw in, it's helpful, like, oh, I get it. You know, that kind of feeling, aha, usually people call it. I'll find that. For me, it looks like it just stops me. Like, so that's why it's hard for me to think of a word. I'll just stop and think. And I'll really feel kind of frozen, not in a bad way. And then I just realized that's what the teachers were talking about. I went to get advice on that. And I asked, I'll tell you, I literally said, is this a case of over-sentimentality? Or is this what you were talking about when you talked about when your heart moves? And it was Kensa Rinpoche at the time, Ken Rinpoche, and he said, that's just what, you know, translation, that's like, go there. And so whenever you feel that, you can feel it because sometimes it's a physical feeling. If you have that kind of tension in your body, you might get a sensation. And just stop and let it be right there and then take the time to investigate what that is. Is that true? Do I believe that? That's Venerable Tendrin's word. Is that true? Do I think I believe in that? Do I like that? And then work it in your mind. You don't have to really work it, but let it go to a place. A good analogy might be if you were, I don't think we did the school teacher analogy before, but I'll do it again. If you were in your teens, say, and you thought about being a school teacher and you wanted to be a school teacher, she's like, don't do it. And you kind of had this stirring. Maybe you witnessed something or you saw something, but you have a little stirring that you want to do something. And then you talk to people about it, maybe, whatever it is your course does. Then you go to school for it and you're studying it and you're kind of moved. You get excited about it and you go through all that and then you graduate. And now you get a job and you go through all the things it takes to become a school teacher. But there's going to be one moment when you're either sitting in the classroom or you're somewhere and a student goes, oh, that's cool. I get that. And you all of a sudden realize that you just said something that helped that child get it. And then you go, oh my God, I'm a teacher. I didn't think I was a teacher until now. Somebody sometimes has to help you get there. You know, it may not be your own, like, yeah, I'm a teacher. I'm making a lot of, oh, no, I'm not. So it can be if, and so in that way, in that moment, you couldn't really say it was an intellectual moment, was it? So what would you call that? What would you call that?
A connection with that other person to what you're doing?
Yeah. Identifying with something. What would you call that?
Awareness.
That what came into you? That's a good word. I like that. Denise, do you have any words there? Realizations? Yeah. That's good. Epiphany? Karen's like, yeah. No, she's got something cooking. Oh, good. That's a really good feeling. She's doing this too, so you can see. Yeah, I do that too, don't I? What would you call it? Yeah. Okay. And you? You get those feelings? Yeah. Oh, with teaching. Good. Chris, do you have any word there? Oh, that's good. The parts and the whole kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Roger?
I agree with her, like a realization.
Yeah. Do you have anything else?
Enlightenment.
Like I feel a feeling of that you're on, like onto something. I think it's what Karen's saying. I'm onto something, and it's I might say resonance. That's another word we could throw in there. There's a certain connection that you're saying, a resonance that happens. And so, I guess I really want to impart with you is to not discount that, because it happens in life. But it really is hard. It's a little bit harder to happen off the cushion than on the cushion, and that's why we're talking about the cushion so much. Is because, so the word I'm looking for is would it be not visceral, or because it's happening in another place, you know, almost, and yeah, it's like you can't because it words, yeah. What'd you say? Yeah, words aren't quite going to take it, and so because trying to talk about it right now, these are all intellectual words, and so I want to allow you to make sure you have that freedom in your own meditation, your own practice, that when you get those feelings, that that's really what's going to help you, spur you on to want to practice more and to realize this is just going to get better and better and better. This is just a little touch of the bliss. Oh, Cohen? Yeah. What, the sound of one hand clapping and whatever, you know, those kind of. I think I've heard of that. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way. Yeah. I think either you told me about it or somebody else did. And so there's a reason that we say that your face looks softer, and there's a reason that these things are happening. And there are tangible things and scientific things happening within the body when you're meditating. And so this is hopefully what we're all doing it for, is to feel better, feel happier, because when we do, then we really are more beneficial than people do say. I have that picture I use at lectures. I want to have what she's having. And it's a picture of Meg Ryan going, oh, my God, at the restaurant. Because, you know, when you set that example for people that you really are happy, they do want to know what you're up to. And then you have the way to say, I'm trying this out. And it helps. Good. Yeah, get to practice it. Well, I mean, and I'm tentative to say it is work, because that sometimes scares people. But I think Dave Maclis, when he taught before, was pretty good at saying, it's not easy. It's not like you're just going to sit here this is all just going to happen by just closing your eyes. Because I'm prefaced it all, remember, with an analytical meditation, not just with sitting down. So there is a fair amount of work involved. None of it's that painful. It depends on what comes up for you, but it is something that you really do have to apply effort to. Did you have something? Okay. So the words that they have used is transforming habitually harmful or unproductive patterns of thinking or emotional responses. Because we are breaking down the barriers of things that we've done over and over again, and we're seeing that there's another way to do it, another way to think, another way to feel. And then in that way it makes changes. Just like, so practicing happiness, you can say you can practice the piano. You are going to get better if you played the piano every night. And you are going to get better if you practice anger every day. And you are going to get better if you practice meditation every day. You are going to feel better. And so, you know, those are just truths. It's not like, I think a lot of us think that we only get better at the things we think about, like piano, cooking or something, but we don't really think about it with negative traits.
Neuroplasticity.
It's just making that groove nice and deep if you practice the same crazy thing over and over again. The definition of insanity, we all know that. Okay. So tonight we're going to work on a meditation about equanimity. And the discussion of friends, enemies, and strangers is a lovely, lovely topic that will help you throughout your whole life. And the problems that thinking of everyone as a friend, an enemy, or stranger, and how this affects our life. So these biases arise from habitual patterns of aversion and attachment. So we're attached to the friends, we want more of that. We're feeling aversion towards the enemies, we want less of that. And it just keeps happening over and over and over again. And it's not just with people, with bugs, certain bugs you like, certain bugs you may not like. We practice it with everything. Certain things we like, we want more of this, we want less of that. And we're just caught in a cycle of it. So we're going to work on that. And then, so in thinking about aversion and attachment, which is really the basis of most all the problems that exist, the root of it is self-cherishing and self-centeredness. So the only reason we don't like something is because we don't like it. I mean, it's not that complicated. When you don't like something, you just don't want it yourself. If you really get to the root of it and you think, and if you made it sound like you were a lot younger, you might say, I just don't want that. I mean, you know, you simply just don't like something. And that's feeling aversion. Do you want the microphone? She talks so soft. I know you hate it, but nobody can hear you. And you have to put it nice and close to. She's scowling. She has aversion to the microphone. What an opportunity to practice.
Just about to say, and it just came to my mind immediately, because yesterday right outside the classroom, right in the children's garden, you know, was this great big long snake. And talking about aversion, so the parents are coming to pick up their children, you know, and this one came and I had to meet her out there. Now, I'm going to tell you there's a snake over there, but we're going to be calm. We're not going to have aversion.
Were we calm?
No.
I'm not thinking.
But it's amazing how this can come almost spontaneously.
Oh, yeah.
Without thinking. So to actually work on it, which I really did, because I had seen the fellow earlier. And
The snake.
And I immediately, I felt it rising up and dealt with it. No, I'm going to be cool to him, you know, like I've heard it said.
Do you like that the snake's a man? It could have been a mother.
No, I thought that I wasn't going to feed this any karmic energy. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm going to deal with this right now. So, no, I didn't stand and stare at him. Yeah, him. But I was aware of that rise, the aversion rising within me just almost spontaneously. You know, you just want to scream. But I did not scream, and I was able to keep it together until he appeared again in the garden later on. There he was, you know, and he didn't want to move. So I was able to not go there. And to try to calm the parents.
Well, you had other people that were relying on you that might have helped.
Yes.
Yes, you just had an aha moment.
Right. So it wasn't just for me. It was to help others as well.
Yeah.
And then I went to get some snake away after, later. You know, so now everything smells like mudball.
Can you hand that to Ernie there? So that's a good, let's use that example because one thing you said, and you did it, but then you did it otherwise, is that it just arose spontaneously. And we're convinced that that's actually true. But is that true? But is it happening faster than a moment where you're enjoying eating an ice cream cone? Yes. I mean, it feels like it's rising faster, but is the moment actually quicker than a moment before something fun? Mm-hmm. Because cortisol. Yeah, you're afraid. So, yes, discomfort. That's exactly the point. So that's a great segue to say it is not happening faster. And just those very moments to slow down, remind yourself of the cushion, remind yourself of these thoughts are just arising. I just don't like this moment. I just don't like this snake. I just don't like what's happening. I don't want this snake in my garden. He could be in his garden as long as he knows there's an invisible fence right there. He can't come over to my garden. So it's not really true. None of that's really true. It's not happening faster. It's not happening. It is happening. It feels like it's happening spontaneously, but it's just from many times of not liking it. It's kind of funny. It's this big. Big. He was big. He was just scary. So, yeah. And Brandon, I would have run out. Oh, look at the cool snake. You know, so it's like everybody's got something different they feel about it. But I want you to really just take that, take it any way you want, but in that thought that it is arising they're just thoughts that are rising, and you work with your mind. It was a great opportunity. And then it might not happen again in a different situation, but that you've practiced now. You have some effort in there of not letting it arise, which is everything we're looking for. Letting it, I got control of this. I got it. I got this. So, and then attachment is just the other side of that. So wanting the ice cream, wanting the chocolate, wanting the cake, and wanting that is just wanting more of all that and convinced that that's going to make us happy. And if you've ever heard anybody teach on this, it's kind of, it's always fun. Chocolate cake and brownies, the Tibetans or the Buddhist people love to talk about that. It's there's no, if one piece of, I could go so many different directions, if one piece of chocolate cake made you really happy, then what would 500 do for you? Yeah. Besides that, you would think that if it's true, then you would practically be enlightened if you ate 500 pieces. Chances are slim. So you have to debate yourself on that. Like, if I think this person's making me happy, then if I had him in my face 24/7, bliss. Bliss, bliss, bliss. Just perfect. Oh, my God, it would be perfect. Right there. So I don't think I think that would make us all laugh. So ask yourself, find your things that you really think that make you happy, and then say, if I had to do this all the time. And that's why we're just chasing, because we want more of this, and now we're tired of that, and we want a little less of it. And we just don't notice it because it seems like life. We call it something. We label it something. But it really is, it's all aversion and attachment. I mean, it's all aversion and attachment. You're just simply going towards something, and now you're going away from it. Now you're going towards this, and then you're moving away from it. And it seems like this lovely dance, and we can call it anything we want to. Like, oh, it's so nice. I move peacefully through my day. Well, you're really just moving on towards something over here. If you just speed it up and shoot it, it could look like mania, right? You're just going, now I'm going to eat. Now I'm going to sleep. Now I'm going to go to the bathroom. Now I'm going to take a shower. I mean, you're just moving towards everything that you... So it isn't that we're not going to do these things. So that's never the point. So just to try to do it mindfully and say, I'm doing it because I need to eat, because I need my body to be in good condition to benefit others and to be healthy. And so in that way, you're not doing something strictly out of attachment or aversion. I need a little help in seeing that in a different way, and then it really helps me get a grip on it. Does that help? Roger's pondering that one.
I'm thinking about the attachment thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a show about the lottery. And
oh, that brings up a lot of attachment.
They said, like a psychologist, and he said the people that win the lottery, within 6 months, they're at the same level of happiness that they were.
Yeah. I've heard they usually fall below. Suicide rate's pretty high, too. I try to practice saying, thank God I didn't win the lottery today. Try that. I mean, really, because aren't you convinced that if you win it, you're the statistic that would rise above everybody else? I'm going to be fine because I'm going to give it all away. Well, you know, three-quarters. I mean, maybe I'll just give like a big chunk, and you're just in there. As soon as you start talking or thinking about it, you're just like everybody else.
I've had life experiences that let you know otherwise. If I was married and my ex-husband...
Did he win the lottery?
No, he didn't win, but he contracted overseas and made like six figures. And that's probably the most miserable I've been in my life. Even though I can spend less than right without any concern. I'm much happier now with like a third of the money.
Me too. No, no, not yet. Here, did you?
It's on Netflix.
We're the only ones who haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's very good because it talks about that topic. They said once you're very big, it doesn't matter if you make $50,000 or $150,000. That really has no bearing on your fulfillment in life. And they talk about the
culture. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Yeah,
food, shelter, clothing.
Yeah.
So we're going to wake up every day and go, oh, thank God today I'm not going to win the lottery. That's our new mantra. All righty, let's see. Let's move along. So I found something in here about, what was this one, page 50. I wanted to show you a few books, too. Let's do that. So this book is Venerable Chodron was just here, and I just started this a couple days ago, and it's just lovely. I hadn't looked at it yet. I bought it a while back. It's really lovely. This explains everything about meditation. I think you'd enjoy it. And it's got a lot of different meditations in here on the Lam Rim. Yeah, it's got a CD. So, you know, we've been joking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been joking about going, the white light is going down through my head to my heart. You know, been, yeah, so there's a CD in here, so you can put those on. We've been joking about wanting a CD. Yeah. Let's see. Maybe I'll skip reading that question, this part, because we need to move along. But I wanted to show you a few more books. Oh, title. Guided Meditations on the Stages of the Path. So this is definitely a Lam Rim book. If you want to study that, I want to make sure that it's not just meditations, because Kathleen's is called How to Meditate. That does cover a broad spectrum of meditations. This is pretty specific. I wanted to show you this just because I'm putting a plug in for Discovering Buddhism. But Roger said he started reading some modules in here, and I thought I'd show you this disc. So this has 12 or 14 modules. It's a two-year course. It's on Mondays. We're in the middle of it, I think. Seven? Okay, good. But this is, I just want to give you a visual if you're interested in taking that. And then I picked up a few of these because, oh, this is another one from Venerable Chodron. I got it and I haven't started it. Don't believe everything you think. So I got these two together and I haven't read that yet, but I wanted to show you that. These are out front and they are free with your donation. So I brought the envelope in to show you. But some of them, this was my first foray into Buddhism, becoming your own therapist. And my therapist handed me a copy of it, and I didn't realize it was Tibetan Buddhism until years later. I read it years and years ago. And so I kind of made a connection, didn't know it was Lama Yeshe back then. This is fabulous. It's so simple. And becoming your own therapist is, we are all insane. It's just a matter of how much.
I know I'm crazy.
Yeah, I know I'm crazy.
Like, that's the first step, at least.
Looking at, oh, yeah, there we go. So this is out there, Making Life Meaningful, Lama Zopa Rinpoche. These are the two teachers that are shown on the side panel there. And The Peaceful Stillness of the Silent Mind. I just grabbed these because they sounded like they fit into our meditation module. But it's a whole bookcase on books that you might really like to look at.
Jill, mm-hmm. Discovering Buddhism, CD-ROM, I think it's either the, it should say it on there, I don't know if it's on the back, it says, I think either the second or third module on meditation.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can read it over and over. Sometimes we do our order a little different, so I'm not ever sure which class is going to be the meditation one. Mind and its potential, and then I never remember the order, but it's good. Good stuff. All right. So then we're going to do our equanimity meditation, and then we'll talk some more after that. So this is the traditional equanimity meditation that I've received, so it's kind of fun to read it to you guys, because I told you actually here, oh, I must have been sleeping during that part, because I'll hear pieces I didn't get before. So settle yourself back into your space however you want to get comfortable. And raise your motivation, your intention for this meditation on equanimity in order to overcome self-centered bias and judgments and to develop the mind of perfect equanimity and balance towards others. And you can add your own personal motivation. And then focus your attention on your breath again using any of the various techniques. Letting your mind be in the moment, moving towards a more concentrated state. And now imagine in the space in front of you, three people. Don't get too hung up on it, but someone you like, someone you dislike, and someone you feel indifferent towards. If that's a difficult category, you might just think of maybe someone that opened a door for you or something you have no relationship with. Just draw to mind three people and hold these images in your mind throughout the meditation. And now first, let's focus on the friend. Allow your feelings for that person to arise strongly. Feel your conviction that this person is definitely, truly a friend. This is a person who is good to you and fulfills your needs and wishes. And also feel how you really want this person to be happy, sincerely. And identify yourself with these good feelings. And now shift your attention towards the difficult person or the enemy, the person you dislike, who is not kind to you, who does not satisfy your needs, who actually annoys you and makes you angry, who hurts you. Regard this person carefully and look at the feelings that you have about this person. Now shift your attention to the stranger, the person you barely know, whom you neither like or dislike. Look carefully at this person and note how you feel indifferent. Now, consider and recognize that the nature of your relationships with each of these three people and the labels you have put on each of them are based solely on what they do or don't do for you at this point in time. Think of people who have been your friend but then became your enemy, and some that were your enemy and became your friend, or strangers who now are friends, because they all started out as strangers, or strangers who became enemies. And recognize that each of these labels are temporary and impermanent, because they are just what the situation is at the current time. Now move your attention back to your friend, and imagine a situation that could cause this friendship to end. Imagine your friend turning against you. Experience the resentment and anger and hurt that you would feel in such a situation. And then ask yourself, do you still feel warmly towards them? Do you feel friendly? Do you have kind feelings for this person? Do you still wish them well? Do you still want them to be happy? And now, where is your friend? In quotes, where is that friend? Remember that this person was not your friend before you were acquainted, and recognize how easily this person could cease to be your friend now, just as you've imagined. And think to yourself that there's no sound reason for feeling kind and loving towards only the friend of this moment. Relationships have changed in the past and will continue to change. Today's friend can become tomorrow's enemy. And now move your attention to the present enemy or the person you dislike, and imagine a situation in which you could be drawn together and become a little closer, maybe a common interest, a word of praise or kindness. Look at that person and your feelings toward them very carefully. Are they softening? Can they become warmer? You can learn to feel warmly towards your enemies. This has happened before, and it will happen again. So why do we hold so strongly to the concept that this person is definitely, in quotes, an enemy? Now move your attention to the stranger or the person you feel indifferent towards. Imagine how one act of kindness or anger from this person could immediately turn him or her into a friend or an enemy. There is no inherent definite stranger. There is no sound reason for the feelings of indifference. Remember that your present friend and your present enemy were both strangers to you before. And this enemy could become a friend or an enemy now. Maintain your awareness of these three people in front of you and think about the fragile impermanence of these relationships. It is only your misconceived belief in the concreteness of these labels of friend, enemy, and stranger that holds your mind back from the possibility of change and fluidity. Your friend, enemy, and stranger are no different than you. They all want happiness just as much as you do. So in this respect, we are all equal. And also, everyone is equal in having the potential to develop their minds to the fullest extent and to achieve ultimate clarity and compassion. The differences we see in people are superficial, based only on our mistaken and narrow self-centered views. In fact, everyone is equal in deserving our care and compassion. Yet none of this means that we should not discriminate at all. On a practical level, our ability to distinguish between actions and individuals is necessary. Naturally, we feel closer to some people, are wise to keep our distance from others. But this is not in any way contradictory to the meditation. The point of the meditation is to develop equal concern, equal regard for everyone, for their well-being, whether they help or harm us at this point in time. And to see that the labels that we put on others are often arbitrary, mistaken, and very changeable. So to end, let's dedicate the positive energy of this meditation and our insights and our ahas to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. It can be a pretty powerful meditation. Do you guys like that one? I told you before, we've used to come out of it sometimes and go up to somebody and say, "You were my friend and my friend." So it's nice. Isn't it strange how you can see how quickly we can move from different places, and you see we really are just thinking about them in terms of how they treat us. Yeah, good. Anybody have any questions about that one? Okay. So we're just going to conclude with how to continue having a healthy long-term meditation practice so we won't become five-week Buddhas. And I think this is the one I wanted to read here. I found this part where she talked about getting to the meditation cushion, and I found it helpful, so I thought I would just read this to you. Establish your motivation as soon as you wake up, before you get out of bed. If you tend to forget, put a post-it in a place where you'll see it, for example, on your nightstand or the mirror. Then wash your face or shower, transforming that action by thinking that you are cleansing ignorance, anger, and attachment from your mind and the minds of all sentient beings as you bathe. If you wish, have a cup of tea and then sit down to meditate. Don't read the paper, turn on the TV, or start your daily chores. If you'd like, read from a Dharma book while you drink your tea, but don't linger. I find all of me in all these parts. The don't parts. Go to the place where you meditate. She's like, get there. And she's right when she says, like, if I do one little thing, I'm off. And I just think, oh, I'll get to it. So I think that really helped me to say, just go straight there. Meditate every day, preferably at the same time, like Roger said. The morning is best because the mind is fresher and not full of thoughts and feelings about the day's activities. Some people prefer to meditate in the evening, and it's fine, although it can be more challenging to get to the cushion after a busy day. I get really sleepy too at night. If you can meditate at both times, it's even better. However, don't think, I'll just take care of this little thing and then go to meditate, because before you know it, you've gotten involved in a lot of activities. By doing your practice first thing in the morning, you are setting the stage for what will happen the rest of the day by cultivating your good intentions. In general, having a regular schedule when you wake up, meditate, eat, and go to sleep is helpful. Sometimes when we get to the cushion and thoughts come, I should return this phone call. The children need me. I found the solution to the problem we were dealing with yesterday at work. These are all ego's tricks to distract us from what is important. I was sitting there reading this going, I need to get up. I really need to get up. I got so much to do. She's saying, just sit there. And so she said, when these thoughts arise, stop and ask yourself, is there anything that desperately needs to be done in the next half hour? Such that if somebody is going to be drastically harmed if I don't do it. No. So if the answer is no, then do your practice and don't worry about anything. I think that was really helpful. Just nothing's going to happen. Just sit there and do it. This way of checking in with ourselves enables us to confirm that we have the time to meditate. Just as nourishing our body every day is important and we take time to eat, nourishing ourselves spiritually is also essential. Meditation is a time to become friends with ourselves. It is not selfish to each day make a time to be quiet, be present moment, and nourish our good qualities. By cultivating your own good qualities and letting ourselves be content, we are able to give more to others during the rest of the day. I get some nods on that one. Consistency in your meditation practice is important, and on the days when you feel lazy or rushed, some self-discipline may be necessary. If you have difficulty finding time for Dharma practice, I like this one, write it in your daily calendar that you have an appointment with Buddha at a certain time. If you want to meditate for 15, 30, or 60 minutes each morning, schedule it in. Later, if someone calls and wants you to do something, you can truthfully say, I'm sorry, I have an appointment at that time. And I thought, that would really help me too. She says that I can't break. Like, oh yeah, that I can't break. If you have to excuse yourself from an activity, in order to go to bed a little earlier so that you're well rested for your appointment with the enlightened one in the morning, do that. We don't stand up dates with our friends just because we're tired or have other things to do. So we certainly shouldn't keep our appointment. We certainly should keep our appointment with the Buddha. Make your sessions moderate in length so that you feel refreshed at the end. Initially, this may be only 10 or 15 minutes. Gradually extend your sessions as your body and mind become used to meditating. Sometimes parents say, I can't take time out to meditate because the children require attention. When you're flustered and rushed, the quality of attention you give your children is lacking. Parents often complain that their children don't know how to sit still and be quiet. However, if they've only seen their parents rush from one activity to the other, am I blushing? To the next, they have never seen them sit quietly and contentedly. The children have no example to follow. Sometimes the greatest gift you can give to your child is to let them or her see you being peaceful and content. If you need to get up a little earlier so that you can meditate before the children wake up, it is well worth it. Some parents alternate meditating if you have two of them there, so that's helpful. You can take care of the child. Other times, bring the young child into the room with you. Can you imagine doing that? So that's great. It's a great idea. The children may enjoy sitting quietly or coloring peacefully while the parents meditate. And while I was reading this part, my cat was right here and my dog was right here. And I couldn't move, so I thought, it's true. The children love it. Don't underestimate the child's ability to understand the value of being peaceful. Give your child the opportunity. Does she have headphones? She's hearing that one. Give your child the opportunity to enjoy quiet, to slow down, to be content with the present moment. However, don't expect a young child to stay quietly for a long meditation session. Once in the room where you meditate, there are various steps that help in preparing for meditation, such as setting up an altar, making offerings, sitting in proper posture, and so on. And then there's the rest, the evening meditation. So, was that helpful? Oh, yeah. Well, this posture that we do here can be done in the chair. You might not have your legs crossed, so that part would be different, but your feet would be flat and uncrossed and just straight on the floor, and then you wouldn't lean against the back of the chair. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I saw a nun sit here in a chair. Mm-hmm. Yep. And some at the retreat sit in a chair. Yep. If they have restrictions, yeah. That I might throw in, you'd be a little, depending on, you know, what it is, that you to be a little, to persevere through it. Because a lot of people feel discomfort in between the shoulder blades, and that can just come from practice. So if you give it up, you might find that you can't push through that window if you give it up. But if it's something that needs medical help, certainly. You could try sitting, you can put it up against the side of your bed. You know, like you can sit up against your bed.
I have a cushion in front of my bed.
Yeah.
When I'm sitting on the cushion, my back's actually lined up.
Mm-hmm.
My lower back against the foot of the bed. Yeah.
You need to create the muscles, just like in anything, the mental muscles and the physical muscles to be able to do it. So if it is just if it's discomfort, I would actually say stick with it. If you go see someone and they say there's a problem, then, you know, sit in a chair. Or, you know, change. But.
You ever heard of Edgar Cayce?
Mm-hmm.
The famous psychic?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know when he meditated, he actually laid
down. He laid down, yeah. I get so sleepy when I lay down. I just like. The only thing I would just suggest, we talked with Carol about that. Robin. I keep calling her Carol. She was using meditation to help her go to sleep. And so you might want to find like one technique that helps you go to sleep, but disassociate it with your meditation so that you don't train yourself to sleep while you meditate. And then because we do lay down to sleep,
yeah.
You know, that's the only association. It does tend to make a connection there. But if some of my clients come into the studio and just they lay right down and they want to talk. But we're talking too while we do it, and meditating keeps them a little more alert. But you do hear a little, I'm just saying. Yeah.
Does anybody know about that? Yeah, they say there's books that say either in the evening or before you go to bed, like when you're laying in bed.
Yeah.
You review the day, starting backwards from meditation
Yeah. There's a whole Vajrasattva practice that we practice a lot here, and it's about reviewing your day, and we go through certain steps, and then taking reliance, and then going, and then just thinking about what things you did, because you don't want to, you want to recognize that you don't want to do something anymore. So if you bring it into the mind stream again, yeah, I don't want to do that. And then you do a certain kind of, it might be a mantra, it might be, you might promise that you'll talk to the person, you might, whatever kind of remedy you want to apply. And then you're closing it with, I promise to try not to do that for a year, and maybe a month. I'm going to try for a week. Okay, maybe like tomorrow. Okay, maybe just while I sleep. Maybe just before I end this meditation. You know, like you get it, whatever you need to do to say, I promise that I'm going to try not to do it with, but something that you can keep. And so that's a good practice. Venerable Chukyila called me one night, like 9 o'clock at night. It was kind of strange that late. And she said, you know, I just said something today and I wondered if that bothered you. And I just, before I go to sleep, I want to clear that off. It was, no, I'm good. It didn't bother me at all. But I thought that was quite beautiful. What a way. So she was reviewing her day and then she cleared that up. Isn't that great? Let's see. There was something we talked about, visualization, that I did think that would be helpful to read when we talked about analytical meditation. And Rogers had a lot of questions on visualizing things. So this is going to use the Buddha, but, you know, this would be with any object you chose. Here we do not try to see the Buddha with our eyes. So this is in a visualization, creating a visualization. But instead see him in our mind's eye. Imagine Shakyamuni Buddha appearing instantly in the space in front of you. He is the size of your thumb. So that might help. You might not have heard that piece about a small... Visualizing a small image like this helps to focus the mind and prevents distraction. You may want to look at the statue or painting of the Buddha before you do it, the session, in order to remember the features. But in your session, lower your eyes, let the image of the Buddha arise in your mind, go over all the details individually in your mind's eye, helping you to remember them. After doing that, focus on the entire image and be satisfied. I like that. Be satisfied with the clarity of the image that appears, without making your mind tight in an effort to reconstruct each and every detail. And if the clarity declines, review the features again and focus your mind on the entire image. If the stability of your concentration is interrupted by thoughts and sensations, then you can just bring your mind back to the image. So doing this helps develop mindfulness and concentration, and it has several unique advantages, helping us to remember the Buddha continually and thus to accumulate the positive potential and increase our feeling and connection to him. And when death approaches, it's easier to recollect this and soothe the mind, those kind of things. It's a whole visualization, it's a whole process, a way of meditating. Does that help a little?
Yeah.
Add some more pieces to what you've been doing?
One thing I wanted to, and I think in the Discovering Buddhism, they say that if you focus like on Buddha or Tara, for some reason they say if that deity talks to you,
oh, he's going to end with one question I don't have to answer. I have 9 minutes left out of 5 weeks. Denise, do you know anything about that?
Does anybody know anything?
Because you're trying to visualize? Is it because you're trying to visualize? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, they say not to talk to them, or they say they ignore them. And that's what I was trying to figure out. Why would you want to ignore them? If they're actually
abusing you, talking to you. Then maybe it's your ego or something. I don't really know. Yeah. Ask Geshe-la. Ask one of the nuns or something too.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. Yeah.
I don't think it's anything we have to worry about too strongly. You know. Yeah, I mean, if you can visualize anything, that's great. Yeah, I'd probably just say cool. I mean, you know, I don't think it's anything that's gonna. So that's pretty neat. Well, congratulations. We should end with that. So let's see. Is there anything else we want to talk about? We have 8 minutes left. What's something juicy anybody's wanted to ask but's been too afraid?
I was wondering about what are the compassion meditations? I was listening to one of the podcasts.
Yeah.
The same neuroscientist. Actually, he was asked to do this study by the Dalai Lama himself.
Oh, cool.
Because the Dalai Lama said, why they always study the negative effects from the brain? Why doesn't anybody study positivity?
Oh.
And so he challenged him to do that like 15 years ago or something. And so he's been studying people who practice specifically compassion meditation. And he started out with people that were real professionals at it. And then he said, well, if it works with them, then we know we can study the layman. And then he went on to study people who practice, I think he said, like 15 minutes or 10 minutes a day for 2 weeks.
Oh, that small amount.
Yeah, he said even with that small amount for 2 weeks, that people show, they measured their level of altruism in these participants. And these are people who had never done any type of meditation or similar practice. And he said that they became more compassionate as they... meditations.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
There's lots of different ways. One we do, we call it Tonglen. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the giving and taking. So you can do all kinds of ways. You can, you can breathe in maybe the issues and problems other people are having. You know it's not going to affect you, so it's kind of preface it with not like you're trying to take anything in. And then you breathe out the positiveness towards them. You can do all kinds of things, breathing in white light, you know, and then just imagining it's beneficial for everybody. There's so many ways to do it. I heard somebody do this one time, and I thought I'd try it. So like when you drive by somebody who maybe is homeless or a situation where you see anywhere, where you see somebody suffering. I've seen people in the car crying, you know, you see someone yelling or honking at somebody. And so you just let your compassion arise for the situation and know they're suffering and then just sort of breathe for them, like imagine that you could take away all that pain if you could, you would, kind of thing. And that way you can do it on a cushion. Some of those things are really good in the moment, you know, in the action when something's happening.
That was one of the challenges for some of the people, was to not like hang on to the feeling of that person is suffering. They said it's kind of like if you look at a picture, say like the 20-year-old victim, you wouldn't think, oh, what if that happened to me? That would be so devastating. You think, like, I wonder how that person feels.
Yeah.
In this moment, and kind of disassociate yourself, but yet still feel,
yeah,
like you're sending them positive.
Yeah, you're sending, you're giving away whatever you have to give that's positive and happy. You want them to have it, and whatever. I did something one time that's kind of fun. I imagined I was going through some difficulties financially, so I imagined that would I lose my house for the whole world? And the enemy is like, yeah. You know, I was meditating. Yeah, cool. I'd do that. Would I lose my house for, and I just kept going. Would I lose my house for everybody? And it got smaller and smaller. And when I got to, and I was still pretty happy and getting excited. Like, would I lose my house for everybody in America? Wouldn't that be cool? I'd lose my house if everybody in America could have a house. Would I lose my house if everybody in North Carolina? And then everybody in my neighborhood. I went, I don't know. My daughter needs a room and my dad, what'd I do? So I thought, oop, there's my line. That's not bad. So in that way, you can practice compassion in all different. You can have fun with it and think, what would I do? There's situations that arose in the neighborhood today, and Miranda and I were talking about this person is really suffering. There's a lot of pain going on, and I was scared, but I tried to just put that away and think, this person is struggling. So, you know, in that way, practicing compassion is so much more, because it actually reduces your own stress level. That's the whole purpose. When you think about somebody else, you kind of forget to worry for yourself. Yeah. So there's a lot of ways to practice compassion. We could list them. Does that help some? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You heard about looking at yourself like a stranger would look at you. Did you hear anything about that? Have you read anything about that?
I've tried to get that kind of view. Like, what if somebody just met me? What would that be? It's hard to do that, but it helps kind of take away the connection we have of who we think we are.
Yeah. I tried to do that. You know, I looked at myself like a stranger would see me. Like if I was a stranger and I looked at myself, how would I react to myself, you know?
Did you take yourself out for a beer? Yeah, that's great. Anything you can do to kind of help break down these labels that we've created for ourselves, then it is really helpful. There's so many ways and so many things we have to go through. Have you ever seen, like, when you take somebody somewhere, I remember the feeling as a young child in church, and when you bring somebody to church, and all of a sudden you are acutely aware of everything that's going on, and you're, well, that what that means is, or, ooh, that's embarrassing, or you feel everything like it's right, it's happening to you. Yeah, that's like right now, like self-cherish. Oh, right now, you're bringing a friend. And the crazy teacher that's teaching. Yeah, you're aware of the surroundings much more. You're aware of the way, if it's too hot, if it's too cold, you want them to be comfortable. You want them to get everything out of it they can possibly get. And then if it wasn't really a good night, you think, well, it was really good last week. You know, like, you're just, yeah, last week was great. So that's like, it's all self-cherishing because you're thinking about yourself so much. But you know, in a way, you're wanting your friend to have the best. But it's kind of funny how the mind, what it does. You know, it's happening right now. All right. Miranda, do you have anything you want to say to close? She doesn't have anything to add. She has a hard time sitting still. But we do a little, sometimes she comes in the room and we do a practice together of making this mandala offering. Okay. It's got stuff you get to do, so it really works for her. You can, beads and... She's, before we used to count, you would really like counting the breath. She would just do it with this vigorous inhale and exhale. Miss Denise, I call her Miss Denise when I look at her. Denise teaches her, so she can probably attest to this about that big.
You know, I've never seen a child or teenager meditate. Usually when you see meditate, they're not older boys, they're adults, you know, and I was just wondering, is there any children?
Oh, every Sunday we do. They do.
Actually, an article about that. I guess in California they had instituted meditation in some schools.
Okay.
And they found, they actually had really positive data. That
yeah.
Students had better attention spans, were more like relaxed, they were getting better test grades. But unfortunately, some of the parents felt that it was imposing religion.
Yeah, it can be difficult.
Essential Buddhist ties, and so they ended the program.
That's got to be handled carefully. But I challenge the children to think about that she sat here very quietly for an hour and a half. So I'd like to challenge her. Yeah, but I'd really like to challenge anyone to think this is, that we think that we're not doing something, but we're doing it somewhere else. We just don't think that's meditating, you know, that, or that we can't, let's just say that we can't concentrate. I can't concentrate, but then you just did something for an hour and a half. So you can sit still for an hour and a half. No, but you can sit still for an hour and a half.
What if you watch,
we do this all the time. Yeah. But I think everybody feels that way, like you really can sit still and do things that you don't think you can do. You just don't notice that you're doing it when you're watching TV or something. Or I remember Dave saying, when you're driving, like you're completely focused on that, but then you do find, have you ever gone like, holy cow, how did I just get here? I don't know what I just did for the last 5 minutes. So you actually were meditating. You just weren't meditating on the object you intended to meditate on. But you've proven to yourself that you can be completely focused on not on what you...
When you drive, like you're saying... Yeah.
You're
actually, when you're driving, you know, when I'm driving, I'm taking the same road every day. I'm actually taking different things.
Mm-hmm. We are capable of so much. Well, great. Yeah. Yeah. Changing the words. Oh, wouldn't that be great? Can you imagine if we had been trained to do that when we were young? Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to say, how come, Marifa, you don't come to the Monday class? Or?
No, I just...
She just started.
Surprisingly.
Oh, that's cool to know.
It's like one of the sponsored pages, and I always art and culture, but I was actually I clicked the link. I was like, oh, that looks interesting. And then I saw the meditation thing, and it was during a moment when I was having a lot of emotional turmoil.
Yeah, the Monday class, we're doing the module. And you can, if you buy the CD-ROM and read up to where we're at, you can pretty much jump in.
I was thinking of coming on Sundays and just checking it out.
Yeah. 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 No, you can jump in anywhere. I told you, like, some people have come to the last class in a 2-year series on emptiness, and the last one in the series, and they show up, and you're like, dude, come on in. Your karma's like, wow. Just try it out. Whew. So, come in whenever. Yeah. And what I forgot to do or didn't really think about was to put the plug in for Donna, which is not Donna C, so as we had loved to laugh about. But Donna is the word for generosity and giving. And so all the classes that we do at the Kadampa Center are not, there's no charge for anything. We're one of the only places that do that. And so in that way, if you move to donate for the classes that you've attended, there's boxes outside that you can put some funds in for that, or shop in the bookstore.
I actually, when I got the lottery that was $100 million,
yeah.
I calculated it out, and after taking half in taxes and all that, it was $296 million.
Oh, wow.
I don't want to, that would cause too much.
It would be too difficult.
Can you imagine building like a $30 million Kadampa facility?
I could. First thing, we're going to get to nunnery. I've got a plan if I do win. But you do have to buy a ticket, is that old joke about God says, buy a ticket. Well, this is great. Let's dedicate all the energy that we put into this, either 1 week, 5 weeks, whatever you've done, and think about all the benefits your mind's received and how great it's been for your family and friends and life. And just take a moment to create your own dedication. And we'll join all this positive energy all together. And everyone who's practicing any act of kindness in this moment, practicing meditation or anything that's calming and helpful and beneficial to the mind, we'll join it all together in this great big ocean and hopes that that is beneficial to the people's and the sentient beings' minds for their future enlightenment. Thank you.